This is James Corbett, and you're tuned into CorbettReport.com, and as I speak, it's the 30th of July 2010 here in Japan, but it's still the 29th of July 2010 in Oklahoma, where I'm joined on the line by James Lane, a member of We Are Change Oklahoma, and one of the people behind the Terence Yakey Truth website at tytruth.com. James Lane, thank you so much for joining me on the program today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, James, I want to talk about some of the things that you're doing at We Are Change Oklahoma, and obviously the investigation that you've been doing into the Oklahoma City bombing for many years. But today I wanted to specifically focus on one of the aspects of that case that I think hasn't received quite as much attention as some of the other aspects of that false flag incident, and that's the mysterious death of Sergeant Terence Yakey, who's a member of the Oklahoma City Police Department, and one of, if not the first responder on the scene that day after the bombing. And it's a difficult, I guess, story to encapsulate, but why don't we start before the bombing itself? Let's hear a little bit about Terence Yakey, who he was, and maybe his family and his background.
Well, what's interesting about the story is that Terry was actually in the process of achieving a lot of his major life goals. You know, he was scheduled to be interviewed for the final time with the FBI in Irving, Texas. He was also planning on moving to Dallas to work for the FBI down there and live with his sister. He was a, you know, Gulf War I veteran who had been in the military police there in Saudi Arabia and served 7 years in the OCPD. And he had just been promoted to sergeant. So many of these things that, you know, he had reconciled with his wife, and he had everything to live for. You know, he had just received the key to the city of El Reno, Oklahoma. And whenever it came out that they said his death was a suicide, I think one of the things that really stand out the most is that there was no investigation. You know, they found no reason to conduct any type of interviews with his friends or family to see if he was even suicidal at all. And they say that he committed suicide because he was living emotional pain, because he couldn't do more to help the people of the Oklahoma City bombing, and that he had survivor's guilt. But that's not founded on anything. That's not founded on any of the family's or friends' information. Nobody even asked them.
And there was no psychiatric assessment or anything that backs that up, was there?
Absolutely not, no. And as you said, Terry was one of the first to arrive on the scene the day of the Oklahoma City bombing. And this is one of the major points that really disproves that ANFO was used as the primary explosive in the Oklahoma City bombing attack. Because if ANFO, the ammonium nitrate fuel oil mixture, was used, it would create a cloud of nitric gas. Every time that this has been used in the past, we're coming up on the 40th anniversary of a bombing in Madison, Wisconsin. And the initial first responders that showed up, 23 of them went to the emergency room for seared lungs. They were overcome, and the rest of the people going in had to wear breathing equipment. Well, we didn't see any of that day. Terry worked himself beyond exhaustion. You know, he was running in, he was digging people out of the rubble. One of the first people he pulled out was Tom Hall, and it said that this giant man, Terry Yakey, you know, hauls him out and sets him down gentle as a baby. And with this, you know, we've had a question, you know, what was the primary explosive used? You know, I mean, if he's able to run in and do that, I mean, it's obvious that there wasn't a nitric gas cloud.
Exactly, right. So that may have been what Yakey was referring to when he said that the bombing was not what it was being portrayed to be. But let's flesh this out a little bit for people and go through that story of the day of the bombing and then the days and weeks afterwards and what exactly happened to him as he started to try to expose the truth.
Absolutely. It had become known, you know, with his family that what he saw that day did not fit the official story. He had wrote a very lengthy, detailed report, and his superiors sent it back and told him, you know, to cut that down. And he received harassment within the police department because he would not go along with the official story. But he wouldn't tell his family specifically what it was, and, you know, the only thing that we can do as guess on that is that he was trying to protect them. I mean, all the way up into his death, you know, he wouldn't tell them exactly what was going on. They knew that the night before he was feeling sick and he was staying at his sister's house, but she said he was in no way, you know, wanting to kill himself. he was going to meet someone that morning. He had gone to a restaurant in El Reno, and where he was on his way to the restaurant in El Reno, where he never made it to his meeting. They found his body later that evening, and the way that they say that he died was that he had cut his wrists and cut his neck, causing him to nearly bleed to death. All right, then somehow after bleeding out in the car, and this is, very gory, but I mean the blood was all the way in the back window sill. It had gone everywhere. Well, after he bleeds to that extent, we're supposed to believe that he climbs over a barbed wire fence, has the state of mind to lock his car also, climbed over a barbed wire fence, and then walked a mile and a quarter before sitting down at a tree and then shooting himself in the head at a downward angle. But for a long time after they found his body, they couldn't even find the weapon. As soon as the FBI comes out, they land on the scene, all of a sudden, bam, there's the weapon. And it's, it's very far away from him. And no testing was done. No ballistics, no fingerprints, and, no actual investigation. It was just deemed a suicide immediately.
Are there any actual photos of the scene itself?
No, but we have spoken with Terry's mother, and she investigated she inspected his body before he was buried. And, they tried to resist that. And she said, I've seen him. I brought him into this world. She wanted to see what had happened. And she noticed that in his wounds on his arm, the grass was actually in there. So there is some suspicion that the marks on his neck could be a rope. But then there's also, we talked to some medical examiners, and they think that it could be it's a type of the way that the body deteriorates. But the wounds in his neck were very deep, and there. So, she looked him over, and the where the bullet had gone in was in the top right side of his head, and then came out at the bottom left side of his jaw, because they had put the wax on there to rebuild his face. So she was very meticulous as she went over and inspected his body.
So let's break that down. So this is a man that has recently received the keys to El Reno, Oklahoma. This is a man that is about to take up a post with the FBI in Dallas, Texas. This is a man who has recently reunited with his estranged wife. And this is a man who is on his way to a meeting with somebody else, presumably about this case specifically, the Oklahoma City bombing case. And he ends up committing suicide in this fashion, supposedly.
Right. Right, with no investigation. And when the family talks to him about this, and they say, "Oh no, he wasn't suicidal. He was murdered." They were told that they watched too much TV, that they're crazy. I mean, both of his sisters described the same treatment, and then his mother, the way that the Oklahoma City Police Department treated his mother was horrible. She was getting in the car when they found Terry's body, and this was around 10 p.m. Well, one of the police officers, Molinix, tells her to wait there, that she shouldn't drive, and that someone would come and get her. Well, she waited until 1 in the morning before she finally just gave up, and no one ever came to get her. They just left her sitting there.
And I understand that that Sergeant Yakey was decorated posthumously with an award for valor.
Yes, he received the Medal of Valor, but this was given to his mother at the graveside burial ceremony. I believe it was the day, just a few days after that he was set to receive that. And when they announced it at the official ceremony, apparently he just got a big standing ovation. I mean, there was some intimidation going on within the force, but a lot of people recognized him for the hero that he was to go in, to that building and pull out so many people and be able to save them.
Well, just incredible. So playing forward from that day, what did the family experience in their attempts to find out more about this death?
It was all intimidation, and like I said, they just told them that they watched too much TV and they were crazy. They weren't able to get anything, any traction on this. They would talk to attorneys. They were told that no attorneys would touch it. And apparently, there is even a saying whenever people, you know, the Oklahoma City Police Department get involved in something that they need to ignore, it's told you don't want to end up like Terry Yakey.
Hmm. Yeah, very telling. Well, so just to be clear on the timeline, the Oklahoma City bombing took place in April of 1995, obviously, and then he ended up dead in 1996, so obviously a fair amount of time transpired between the bombing and the time when he ended up dead. In that time, obviously, there must have been quite a bit going on before this actually transpired. What can you tell us about what he was experiencing during that time, or what his family was experiencing during that time?
Well, he really kept this from his family, and you know, there was even a point where his sister said that he was kind of hiding out a little bit. You know, he was living by himself and was concerned about his safety, and so I think he intentionally shielded them, you know, to protect them from whatever danger he was encountering. He must have had some sort of information that he wanted to get out. And, you know, he couldn't do it through the police department. He couldn't do it through the regular channels, because they were coming down on him for what he had already said. So, I mean, up until that point, you know, it's a little bit of a mystery there, because we don't know who he was talking to. But we know he was a big man. And for someone to come up to him and be able to get him in his car like that, it had to have been somebody that he trusted, or, you know, someone that he allowed to approach him. Because, I mean, he's a police officer with training, and, you know, he'd been in the Gulf War. So he knows about personal security.
Right. Now, as I understand it, he did make a phone call before his death saying that he was being followed.
Yes, and he actually conveyed that to his sister also, that he was worried that they could find him somewhere, you know, where he was staying, and he was very, very concerned that, like, someone was after him. And, I mean, there was even a phone call that he had made to his wife at one point, you know, and they said that he, you know, he was kind of breaking down, saying that's not the way it happened. You know, when they were talking about the official story, he goes, no, this is not what happened. So we want to know what it is that Terry knew. What information did he have? And so that's part of the investigation, of trying to expose, you know, the brutal, you know, torture murder of this hero, is to also uncover maybe what it was that he found. So that's why the family started the Terrence Yakey Legal Fund, and that can be found at tytruth.com. And it details out the whole story about, you know, Terry Yakey and his murder. And we've also put a YouTube video up there that We Are Change put together, that we got the interviews with the families, and we, you know, let them say in their own words why it is that they think that this needs to be investigated.
Well, tell us a little bit about your own involvement with the story, how you came, obviously, to start with the OKC bombing in general, and specifically this case, and tell us a little bit about meeting the family of Terrence Yakey.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I'm born and raised here in Oklahoma, and it's always been something that's, you know, I mean, obviously when an event like that happens in your home city, you know, you feel that, you know, you want to investigate it more. And I think a lot of people may have just turned away from it because it was so horrific and they just wanted to put it behind them. But I wanted to know more about it. And after getting involved with We Are Change, you know, I said, well, We Are Change Oklahoma needs to make Oklahoma City bombing, I think, the primary focus. You know, I mean, the New York chapters, you know, they deal with the events of September 11th, but it seemed like, I guess, a lot of time had passed from Oklahoma City, but, you know, there's a lot of information there that needs to be, you know, told. So we put together a trifold flyer that we hand out at the bombing memorial to try to raise awareness and drive folks to, you know, the websites that we have. We've recently put up OKCBombingTruth.com, and this lists the top 10 reasons to question the official story. We link all of the documentation, and there will be more and more put on there as time goes on, but, you know, that's our initial publish on that site, is the top 10 reasons. We're trying to get folks to understand that this could happen again, You know, and we're not saying the government did anything. I don't think the government can even run the post office. But we have evidence of foreknowledge within certain elements of agencies that's, you know, at this point, you know, needs to be investigated. And you've got senior officials of the Clinton administration saying that the only thing that's going to save Obama is another Oklahoma City or 9/11. You know, those are scary words.
Absolutely. It certainly is. And I think for anyone who has spent any time researching it, they'll see all of the various forewarning, foreknowledge, and provocateurship of the various agencies that were supposedly afflicted on that day, including, of course, the ATF. But absolutely, it's an extremely important case, and it continues to be one as we move into a new age of potential Oklahoma City-type bombings, and we hear the rhetoric of that increasing. So tell us, I understand you're working on a documentary about the Oklahoma City bombing. Tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. We are starting we've started on a documentary film. Our company is called Free Mind Films. That can be found at freemindfilms.com. And the movie is going to be called A Noble Lie, because that is from Plato's The Republic. And a noble lie is a lie that is knowingly told by the elite in order to maintain social harmony or their position, their social status. And we think that that is relevant here, because we saw a lot of people that, whether or not they were part of the planning or any of that, we're not saying that, but they were complicit in the cover-up. They used the event to their own benefit. You know, this tragedy, these people, real people died that day. And, you know, you got Bill Clinton running around saying that that's what got him reelected, you know. So, because everybody, you know, they really focus on the September 11th events, and everybody has a lot of knowledge about that, but it seems like the Oklahoma City bombing, maybe so much time has passed, we need to revisit it, because there are some of the most glaring examples of cover-up there that, you know, we don't see that, and they got, you know, the more sophisticated in cover-up with 9/11, whereas Oklahoma City, I mean, it's just very blatant. And we think that it's time that the story be told. And that's why, you know, we're getting the interviews. We're talking with, you know, Taranchiki's family. We got interested in his case initially because we found out, you know, he was one of the first responders. And that's where we got into the nitrous gas cloud. I mean, for me, that was one of the major, you know, pieces of evidence that show that the official story is not true. I mean, there's mountains of evidence beyond that. I mean, he had the largest manhunt in history for John Doe number 2, and then all of a sudden we're just supposed to ignore that and act like, you know, well, that didn't happen. They said that the people were confused at the Ryder truck rental place. Well, they only rent a couple of trucks a day. It's not a high traffic office. And I don't think that they're going to be confused about who came in with who and at what time. And it wasn't like a lot of time had passed. This was, they were questioned 48 hours after he had rented the truck. So, I mean, multiple witnesses. We've got 23 affidavits where people saw Timothy McVeigh with another man. You know, this can't be denied. And the FBI just acts like, well, it didn't happen.
Absolutely. And, of course, there are so many aspects to this case. And as I've gone through on my podcast before, and as I know you talk about quite a bit in the various media that you do, but obviously one of the linchpins of that case is the Terence Yakey death, which was so obviously not what it was portrayed to be. And just one more time, tell us about meeting the family and what that was like.
Absolutely. It was difficult. I mean, they're some of the most kind, loving people that I've met. I mean, they just welcome us into their home. I think they were grateful that someone, you know, it was trying to dig into this, because they had been fighting for so long and had been told no and turned away so many times. They really showed us a lot of kindness and love. So it was really difficult to listen to the family, you know, recount the death of their loved one. I mean, it was just, you know, his mother, Ludella, she says, you know, it's very painful to go over it time and time again, but she vowed that she would not give up until the truth was known about the death of her son. His sisters are great ladies and very brave in what they're trying to do. And they are still going down to you know, try to get his belongings. I mean, that was just something that, that happened recently. I mean, they had his weapon in storage for, you know, all these years. So right now they're trying to get the investigation going, and that costs money, you know, and that's why it's taken so long. But there are some people that are interested, have agreed to come on board and pursue this case.
Well, that's very exciting. So once again, it does require money to get this type of thing off the ground. So tell people once again about the Terrence Yeke Truth website and how they can donate to the Legal Defense Fund.
Absolutely. They've got a donate button that's on the website, and it's tytruth.com. You can go there, and it's there's PayPal, and there's also a P.O. box if anybody just wanted to mail a check. And 100% of that money goes directly to the investigation to try to find out the truth about this hero's death.
Well, certainly a more noble cause would be hard to find. So my hat's off to you for all the work that you've been doing. And of course, my heart's out to the family as well. And James Lane, I would love to have you back on once the documentary has been released so we can talk more about that at some greater length. But at any rate, I'm very excited to hear more about it. And how can people keep track of what you're doing with Rare Change Oklahoma?
Okay, you can check out the websites. We've got wearechangeoklahoma.org. We update that site daily. Anytime we've got a new YouTube video coming out, we put one up there. I believe our next project is going to be a 10-minute YouTube video. It's very similar to what we did for Officer Yeke. We're going to do one for Kenneth Trinidu. This was another man that was murdered here in Oklahoma, that the murder has ties to the Oklahoma City bombing. We also are going to do a video of the top 10 list here, or the top 10 reasons to question the official story. You can also check out our radio show that we do Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Central Time on the Rule of Law Radio Network, and that website is radiofreeoklahoma.net, and you can also check out ruleoflawradio.com.
Yes, and having been a guest on Radio Free Oklahoma, I would definitely recommend it, and I would like to thank you for having me on that before as well. So absolutely some incredible work that you guys are doing, and my hat's off to you, so hopefully we can check in again at a later time. And best of luck in all the work you're doing.
Thank you, and you too, and I appreciate the opportunity to get the word out about this story, and that's one of the things that the family said. They said that anybody out there that has any information or can help, please, you know, let them know, and there's contact information on the website at tytruth.com. Thank you.